This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Matthias, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I've spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of. Doc, nice to be back in the studio. Welcome back. You had a good break. I must say that Speedo looks good on you.
For fuff's sake, Speedo. I'm glad that we're on sort of an audio channel, not a video channel, because my shirt is a little snug, honest with you.
I wonder whether Prince Harry wasn't wearing the fuff brook around the palace. Was he thinking maybe he was kicked out rather than leaving?
They said to him, that's it. You take your stuff and
absolutely.
Get off.
Yeah, take your slummies and duck. Well, really excited today because we've got Marte Okabe, who's the CEO of the ACA. I have to kind of discipline myself to say ACA, not AAA, but Advertising Communications Association or something close. You're going to explain that to us. Welcome today.
Thank you.
We've been chatting together for quite a while now about getting this dialogue going. So let me start off with a question, Marte. I mean, I just happened to be watching a TED talk with Simon Sinek, and he made it's a marvelous talk, which I would recommend anybody to go and have a look at. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. Why do we even have ad agencies anymore? It's so fragmented.
I think part of the value chain, the marketing value chain for me, there's got to be somebody who executes. And I think execution comes from the agency side of things, whereas the marketers and the businesses create the strategy, they create what they want to do and how they want to impact their consumers, how they want to deliver their products to consumers. But who's going to do that work? Who's going to do that communication in order to do that? And I think the importance of an agency and an agency working with a client, it has to be the left and the right hand. It can't be exclusively. They've got to work together because the marketers have the big idea. They've got the goals. They've got the objectives. But the agency is the executor and is the one that makes a really horrible-looking product look beautiful. So I think not just that, but also it's about effectiveness. How do we become how do agencies become effective in delivering what marketers need? That is also very critical because you can't just make pretty pictures that don't sell anything, because then what is the point of an advertising agency? Because the marketer might as well have a design software in front of them, on their computer and start designing their own stuff and releasing it out to the masses. But when you have that partnership with an agency that can critically think about the consumer and what the consumer needs and wants and how we need to sell this product to the consumer, the agency is then able to translate the big words that marketers come up with into words that are relevant for consumers. Because at the end of the day, it's about the consumer. The consumer is at the center of everything that agencies do and what marketers need to deliver.
Doc, I mean, you're the guy who's really in the best position to talk about client expectations. I mean, you've worked with agencies for years. What have you been looking for?
Yeah, absolutely, Gordon. I think, you know, I think traditionally you would look at an agency, and many people would bash agencies these days by saying they've either gone too digital because it's the fad of the day. And I don't think it's a fad. I think it's to stay, certainly in our lifetime, as a discipline, a delivery mechanism, or they've got too creative, or they do too much award-winning work in award season, and suddenly, you know, in between you find some quite average, shoddy work. I've also seen a lot of retail, which, you know, I understand the need for, but I'd like to balance it against brand building stuff, which I don't think I've seen enough of in the last year or so. But I mean, Gordon, to answer your question, and Marte, thanks again for making the time to come spend with us today. I've always looked at a partnership, and again, I think that word's been overused and a little bit cliche to some degree, is not just to bash the agency, but also to look internally. You know, as a client, and I was always on the client side, I would critically look at myself and my team and say, are we clear what we want?
Yeah.
Because so often you're not. It's a little bit hazy and a bit fuzzy. Mm. You know, it almost reminds me of phoning the IT department, you know, when you've got a computer problem. You're not quite sure what you want or what you just say, listen, so solve this problem for me. And the guy says, but what did you do? What did you press? And you're not quite sure. And you just hope that the genius will sort it. And I think to some degree, through the years, and I say many clients perhaps have relied on agencies to take and demystify the fuzz and come up with something brilliant, which I think is just nothing short of crazy. You know, I think agencies and clients need to work better together. Clients, understanding their business and having somewhat of a creative input. Which traditionally was almost taboo from a creative point of view. And the opposite, of course, is that agencies have far more than just a creative view of the world, but a fundamental understanding of the client's business. Mm.
Can I ask a question in what you've just said? Sorry, I know I'm not the interviewer, but I'm going to ask a question. Because I've had this conversation with quite a few people about digital.
Mm.
And in terms of digital and the conversation we've had is the importance of digital.
Mm.
That if you take direct marketing, for example, it was a big fad back in our days when we started, when I started in media, it was direct marketing was one of the channels, the distribution channels for communication.
Mm.
So is digital not seen in that, should digital not be seen in that role as well? Because where's direct marketing today? Gone. It was a fad. It's gone. So, what does it mean for digital? Is it equally going to be a fad that fades away, or is it something that's going to be part of the DNA and of what we do as a communication industry?
Yeah, Gordon, if I can answer, I think certainly for me in the foreseeable future, I think digital is here for keeps. Mm. And I think you're right. I think part of its replacement is the direct marketing side, but far broader than that and far wider than that. And I'm not just talking about, you know, every person with a camera phone is suddenly a social commentator on Facebook or something. I'm talking about something that goes far broader and deeper. Now, where I sort of had a problem towards the end of my corporate career was I would still sit in and I had weekly status meetings with the agency and the media house at the same time. Digital on the agenda item would still be sort of towards the middle of the agenda, always led with TV and radio and then dropped down. The one that dropped away was newspaper right down the bottom, and cinema was a Cinderella medium at the end of the time. But I always said to the guys, if digital is so important and we're talking about it, why don't we lead with digital? And again, it's that whole do a digitally led campaign and all of those, which I still felt at the end, and maybe if you look at the generation of marketers after me, they won't be thinking big television. Now, if I look at some of the more sophisticated markets, and I was actually just on the line earlier this week with a guy who worked in my team, he's in London now, and you want to see how they work digital. It's only digital first, and it's all about attribute, push and modeling. It's about economics. It's about a whole lot of return on investment metrics off that, as opposed to just being creatively led and being fun to be on digital. And I use that term, it really in inverted commas. Mm. So what he was saying, the big shock for him a year into his stay in London, is suddenly the analysis and the deep dive digital that they're asking for. You know, you can't just be flippant and say, well, we'll stick something on Facebook and you see what comes of it. I think those days are fast disappearing, and maybe it's a catch up. And I think you'll find in the South African market, you're going to get to that stage pretty soon. So to answer your question, a very long way around, I think digital is an important and intrinsic channel that will certainly change and improve over time.
Yeah, I think you've got to bring it back to, and you both made mention of the consumer being at the center of the offering, whether you're a client, you know, marketing a product, or an agency creating a communication platform. I mean, you know, if you go back to the 60s, when radio was king, you know, television came along, was a new thing. You know, people moved to television because consumers were moving to television. The reason that you should be engaging with digital is not for any research or technological reasons. The consumers are doing that. But what's also a global phenomenon now is the realization that if you analyze consumer behavior rather than media consumption, that television still plays a critical role. Right across the board, conventional television is still central to the overall offering. And I'm speaking more and more, visualizing in my own head, that you know, you've got to take the media pie and break it up into listening, watching, engaging, so you would actually be feeding back. And you mentioned, you know, the collapse of print. The print has collapsed, but reading is at the highest it's been in a long time in measured audiences, because I've just displaced kids. Young people have not stopped reading. They are just reading off a different platform. So I think we need to, that's definitely something we need to talk about. But I'd like to bring it back, Marte, to 2 points. I mean, you talked about relationship. Doc, you said partnership. How does an agency build a relationship or a partnership when procurement is rolling business every 2 or 3 years? I mean, it takes you 2 years to understand the business, only by year three that you're really being productive. How can you build a relationship on a short-term basis?
Well, that's a tricky question, Gordon, because I think we've got to look at two sides of the coin for me. I think there's the side where I've got a relationship with I've appointed a new agency, and the client and agency relationship is not that great. Yes, it takes time to work on that relationship, but 6 months down the line, it's still not working. A year down the line, still not working. And it becomes like a client is pulling teeth, and agency is also feeling client is just disrespectful. And those dynamics within a relationship become very difficult to work through if you're stuck with somebody on a 5-year contract. Because how do we walk away without impacting our business and having penalties of walking away from a 5-year contract? And that's why I'm saying there's two sides to the coin. And then there's the side of 2 years down the line, relationship is awesome, the agency is delivering what they need to deliver. But what is important, if that is the case, the client then sits and says, I'd like that agency to repitch, to come back and become the repitch, and there's a pitch process, but we are willing to hear from this agency again because the relationship was so awesome and they were delivering the work that we needed to deliver. And when then client looks at that relationship and says, we want to continue for another 2 years, and we know that it's all about introducing new players into the industry. It's all about bringing new people in, working with different agencies. That's why there's that cycle, that 2-year cycle or that 3-year cycle, which, as you say, that might not be long enough for us to build a long-term relationship. But in asking the agency to repitch and come back, you know what they can deliver. You know if you want them back on board. You know if you want to engage with them further. So for me, I think it protects the client, but also it protects the agency, but it protects the relationship as well. That's my take on it.
How do you protect the other five? I'm involved in the pitch at the moment. There, it's phase one was, I think, 15 agencies. No, phase two is 10. So if the relationship is good and you're going through a procurement process of repitching it, Where does that leave the other three or four or five players who are going out there pitching in good faith when in actual fact the predisposition of the client is not to move the business in the first place?
Yeah. Okay, for us as the ACA, we've developed a tenders and pitches code.
Okay, great.
And in developing that tenders and pitches code, we that is one of the things that we discourage. We discourage clients having 15 agencies to come and pitch on a 5 million rand business, for example. You have 1 in 15 chances to actually win that opportunity. And you are spending 500,000 rand, or you're spending 100,000 rand or 200,000 rand to win that business, and you've got 1 in 15 chances. Is it really worth it for you as an agency? No, it's not. So in our tenders and pitches code, we encourage clients to invite not more than 5 agencies to come and pitch, and in inviting the 5 agencies, then we are saying to clients, we encourage clients to say, understand that this pitch costs every agency money to put together. But also what we are saying is that we need to allow smaller agencies to come and play on that pitch platform. And smaller agencies can't afford to be parting with 200,000 rand that they don't even know they're going to get back. So we walked away from the pitch fee. But we encourage clients to have a negotiation with the agencies that are on your pitch list to say, this is what we can negotiate in terms of this is what the pitch fee we are offering for people to come and pitch. Anyone who has not been successful in the pitch, this is the pitch fee that you'll be offered. It's not a rand for rand kind of pitch fee, but it's a... We recognize that you've done the work and it costs you money, and this is what we are negotiating with the industry and with the players that are coming on board to say this is a rejection fee, basically.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
Yeah.
So there's no set
pitch fee
because there was a figure.
But we then subsequently walked away from setting a pitch fee to say, client, you need to negotiate with the agencies that are coming on pitch to say this is what you're offering as a pitch fee.
I think just adding, and I mean, I don't want to talk necessarily around pitches and fees, but wider on the role of procurement within that. Gordon, you made the point of procurement, and I mean, through the years, I've obviously in big companies worked with procurement, and purposefully from a governance point of view, and I'd include sometimes our internal audit as well, just to make sure that things were above board but never really on the selection criteria for the creative.
Yeah.
It was only once we got to the numbers, and even there, I would like to say that my team and I played a different role with them, because they're not buying a commodity. Mm-hmm. Now, and I don't want to diminish the role of procurement at any stage, but I mean, buying 2 bottles of Bon Aqua or another water is the same to me, or 2 t-shirts. They're commoditized items. You're now buying intellectual capital, you're buying relationship, you're buying people, you're buying reputation, you're buying a track record, you're buying a lot of intangible things that a seasoned marketer should know. You should know what you're buying. You're not just buying the pictures that the people are presenting. That's just the pitch process. You're buying the track. I'd only assume that people, and certainly when I did it, you look at the track record, you know where the people came from, and you know the industry. People move around. Mm. They've worked on pieces of work that are very similar to what you're looking for, etc. I never expected the procurement people to know that. I mean, how could they? Their skill set was around numbers and is it a retainer? Is it what type of fee are you, and what is it based on? What is benchmarking and yardsticks? And we used, ironically, we're talking yardstick, used external companies like a yardstick as an example to get the numbers right, because obviously that has to go to the financials and the CEO, but not on the creative choosing.
Yeah.
I never expected that. I thought it was a bridge too far. And I don't think, and I didn't wanted to be in a disrespectful manner, and I made sure offline that I had that discussion with our procurement people, saying, please, guys, there's certain sections that I don't think, with the best will in the world, you can add that value. You can only add value later on. And certainly, Gordon, I never had procurement decide to move agencies. That was never their call. It was, it was always, I guess, mine and the CEO's call. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And not from a territorial point of view, but from an expertise point of view.
Yeah.
That's just where it made sense.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's crucial at the end of the day, that functionality, and we're gonna, I guess we'll get there in a moment, is what it's all about. I mean, you can save 5% on the fee, but why would you do that if your current formula is producing 10% growth on sales?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's for me has been the part I don't get. You'll save $1 million, but it's costing you $100 million in sales because you've disrupted the thought process. It never made sense to me.
And also what you measured on, I guess, you know what I mean? So if you measured, if your KPI is cost reduction, that's the one side of the income statement. Well, then clearly that's where you're going to go. Now that's just, again, just poor leadership in the main, you know, from a, and I'm just thinking of the balance scorecard as one example. I mean, it's just a holistic view as a senior person. You should have a view that sometimes says you can't only want to paddle your boat. You've got to look at other people. And certainly the other side of the equation is revenue generation.
Yeah.
You know, so you're right. What is the one for the other? What is the ratio of anticipated or expected costs against the either income loss or income generation on the top line? And if you can't do or at least have the sense to look at that ratio, then it becomes, in my view, problematic because you start cutting just for the sake of saving, and you can't save yourself into a profit.
And I think in before procurement days, I think marketing was always seen as a cost center, you know, and marketing being a cost center but not a profit generator. In marketing was like at the back of people's minds, and I think the role that the business saw marketers, how the business saw marketers was just as this cost center, and I think then the businesses then realized we have to bring in that procurement arm in order, as you say, Doug, to have that proper support of the marketing function in terms of, are we looking at the bottom line? Yeah. Are we looking at the impact on the bottom line? And for us as an association, we want to engage more with procurement people in order for us to have that proper balance in terms of, we understand the importance of that of procurement as a very strategic arm to support the marketing side of things. And how do we have that conversation that does not kill the agency business? So
yeah, look, I mean, on the creative, Doug, you know, you're right. Yeah. You know, that's a tough one because that's an emotional decision.
Yeah.
And you know, what's a good idea? It's subjective. But on media, it becomes a little easier to manage. But even there, I'm amazed at the interface I have with procurement people, many of whom know everything about finance and buying and procurement, but have never even been exposed to the fundamentals of the terminology that we use to buy and sell media, which is crazy. So are there any plans to run workshops with procurement people just to upskill them on the mechanics of the media buy?
From our side of things as the ACA, I think we are trying to get our foot in with a bigger procurement body, so that we're not having conversations with procurement people at AB InBev, at APSA, at one-on-one. We need to consolidate everybody and bring everybody together so that we're having one conversation. And it's not us talking at them. We are engaging. We are engaging in coming up with the proper solutions that actually work for the industry and build the industry. Because for me, I think that's the critical thing. We have to look at how do we strengthen the industry and not weaken it. And in the short term, to have that conversation with procurement people, not yet. But in the long term, it is something that we'd like to bring together as the ACA, because our agencies are having, some of our agencies are struggling with procurement people. And how do we then have a conversation that is more building the industry rather than destroying the industry?
I think, you know, on the procurement issue, you talked about it being critical. And I think it's critical and it's urgent as well.
Yeah.
I mean, because from what I can understand, I was debating in my own mind, Doc, which were the more endangered species, rhinos or advertising agencies, okay? I mean, because when you've got people like P&G moving agencies in-house, when you get situations like Renault North America, who instruct the creative agency and the media agency to actually work together or take a hike, at the end of the day, how do you, unless we get on top of this thing, ad agencies disappear and become internal departments of the big groups. How do you counter that? What do we do? What's our offering? We're getting back to my first question. You know, people don't buy what you do, they buy why we do it. Why would we do things differently in order to convince a P&G to have an external agency?
It's about, and I think Doug said it earlier, it's about what agencies offer, what agencies, and I know that, sorry, I'm cutting my sentences, but I know that sometimes what happens is that businesses steal from the agencies and bring agency people in-house. The expertise lies there and they bring it in-house. But I think when you live inside a certain brand and that's all you know, you don't know anything else but that, you don't widen your expertise, you don't widen, there's no depth to you as a creative person, as a strategic person, as a media person. But when you have a portfolio of clients, your experience is a bit broader. And I think in businesses that bring agencies in-house, that's where I think they have the difficulty because they're inwardly focused and they don't see the landscape, they just see themselves. And I think it's a danger in the long run because you're doing what pleases you. You're not doing what maybe works for the consumer, number one. Do you really have the strategic insights in order to fulfill consumer needs and what consumers expect from you if you are just inwardly focused? But if you are operating within an agency framework where agency framework has multiple clients, one person is working on three different clients, the experience becomes a bit broader for me. And I think there's a bit more depth in people like that rather than inwardly focused people.
Donkey, I mean, you've driven some big advertising buses. Where do you fit?
I agree. And I think, you know, I guess as a client, sometimes, and I find myself, I'd want to jealously keep the good people only on our business. Mm. And it will be an arm wrestle with the agency, certainly CEO, and that to want them to expand themselves as well, to keep them fresh, work in a completely different category. So I buy into the fact that in the main, you're buying creativity in an agency. And sure, you've got other functions. You've got traffic and client service and a whole lot of stuff. But in the main, you're buying the big idea and the creative execution. And you made the point earlier, closely aligned with your media agency. So I have worked with both models. You know, I've worked with external agencies mostly. And at one stage, we had an internal retail arm of the agency that sat, so they still belong to the agency, but they sat within our premises where we could literally see them all day, every day. And it was really done around the quick turnaround time for retail, you know, and you could literally lean over somebody and change something on the Mac and move stuff around. So that was the need for it, but not the brand piece, not the sponsorship piece. Those pieces always sat outside, although I had people heading brand, heading sponsorship, heading activations. Mm. They would work with the external agency for exactly that reason. Mm. Breadth of skill and hopefully wherewithal around their craft, which is in the main creativity.
Well, let's quickly flip it because we're running out of time a little here, but we talk creativity, but one of the biggest developments on the horizon for ACA this year is the shift and the alignment with EFIs, which is a functional award, a global functional award. Tell us a bit about that, because that's a big one.
Okay, that is a big one for us, and we're super, super excited. 2020 will be the inaugural year for the FE South Africa Awards, and we are running the workshops on the 28th, 29th, and the 31st.
Yeah, 28th, you've got Durban, 29th, Joburg, and 31st, Cape Town.
Yes. Yep. So basically it's about marketing effectiveness, and marketing effectiveness from a brand perspective, from a product perspective, from a media perspective. That's what we'll be looking at in terms of the detail, because we're going into the workshops and we'll be taking through, and people can attend the workshops. Anyone who's interested in entering an FE, they can attend the workshops because we'll be explaining the FE process in detail. It's very different from the APEX process. It's not as intense as the APEX process, but it's still a good award to have. And because it's a global award, we are now getting exposure globally. So there's something called the Effie Index. If you win a gold Effie, you can go on to, they then, Effie Worldwide will then compare you with all the other entries that have won gold globally. And then you can go on to, you can be listed on the Effie, on the Effie Index. And also the judging process is very different. We've got round one of judging, we've got round two of judging, and we've got the grand Effie judging. Round one of judging is middle management. We would want people who are in middle management to apply to become judges. In round two of judges, it's executives and leaders of industry to apply to become judges. And the grand Effie we take from the people who judge round two and move them
on. So it's a comprehensive policy. And again, I'm just going to repeat those dates for everyone. 28th in Durban, 29th, Joburg, 31st. And we can find out about the Effies on the ACA website.
Right, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Doug, we're running out of time. Last word to you.
Yeah, I think, Gordon, thanks again, Wajid. Thanks very much. And just tell us a little bit about how do people get a hold of you, either at your organization as well as in your personal profile? Because, you know, we want to obviously boost it. We want people to get involved. Our podcast is all about being inclusive and getting more people au fait with the work of the broader advertising marketing industry. So if you don't mind just giving us one or two either numbers, websites, social platforms.
Okay. For the ACA, you can obviously get, not obviously, but you can get hold of us on, we've got our website, www.acasa.co.za. For the Effie website, it's www.effieawards.co.za. And then our telephone number at the ACA is 010-880-3399. Our offices are in Illovo, 27 Fricker Road in Illovo. And you can send us emails as well at info@acasa.co.za.
Excellent. Thank you.
Lottie, thanks for coming in at tight notice. We really appreciate it. And we're looking forward to working with you because you and I have got some really interesting plans on the transformation space as well, which I think is really, really exciting. And we really want to profile it on the podcast. Doc, thanks again. Good to see you.
Thanks.
Lose the Fife Brook China. That's not really suitable for an executive of your standing in the industry.
Good. Thanks, Marta. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You. Thank you, Doug. Thank you.
Ciao.
And so that was another episode of The Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get a hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get a hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views and certainly will respond. And hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc. And it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia. And I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo. And we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.